Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, June 2nd, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
What an animal!
You ain't seen nothing yet, honey. You know, June is Gay Pride Month, right? And if you don't believe me, just ask President Obama. He made the official declaration again this year on May 28th, 2010. And as you may also know, he is the first president in our glorious history to do so. So, hooray for him, and even a bigger hooray for all us queer folk on this 41st anniversary of the birth of the modern gay rights movement.
I have no life.
Well, stick around. I have a knock-you-out lineup of guests for this special month. And to kick things off, so to speak, we take another audio field trip. I have the distinct pleasure of welcoming another Seattle-based personality, the veritable queen of kink couture, Tonya Winters. We visit with her in her cavernous new workspace, don't you know? And you should also know that you're getting a double bang for your buck today, because Tonya is a twofer. She's here as part of the Sex Education podcast series, as well as the Erotic Mind series. So, yay for that!
Maybe I should come back another time.
No need to do that. In fact, you can visit Tonya at her websites, winterfetish.com and wintercouture.com. She can also be found on Facebook, facebook.com/tonya.winter.
I'm in love with this man. But he doesn't know that.
Well, now I do. Thanks, I guess. And to add to the total awesomeness of today, we welcome a brand new podcast sponsor, Papaya Toys. You know, I've been involved in all sorts of cutting-edge sex education and sexual enrichment projects over the last 30 years. That's why I was so delighted when the makers of Papaya Toys invited me to assist them in designing, developing, and promoting their superior quality of toys that fit the human body and enhance sexual pleasure. You can have the utmost confidence that all of Papaya Toys are made of the highest quality materials, 100% medical grade silicon to be precise. They are German engineered to bring you maximum pleasure, and they will help arouse you to your full sexual potential. Why not put some joy in your life? Papaya Toys are perfect companions for your private intimate moments or to share with a partner. Either way, you will rediscover passion and have a load of fun doing so. Look for their dazzling banner in the sidebar of my site.
It ain't over till it's over.
Truer words were never spoken, but it's time to get on with the show. Welcome, Tonya, and thank you for inviting me to your lair. As you can hear from the reverberations, we are in the workspace. It's a pleasure being in your oh-so-creative company. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hello, nice people.
And since this is part of the Sex Education podcast series, as well as the Erotic Mind podcast series, you can be certain that there are a load of big, fat perverts out there, too. Would you like to say hello to them?
Well, maybe.
Hello. They're scary.
Good.
So, it's good to finally connect with you in this podcast setting. I've been a secret admirer of your creations for a long time. In fact, I admired them long before I knew you and that you were connected to them. And it wasn't until I read that Stranger piece that was a couple weeks ago in The Stranger that I made the connection and then connected with you. So this is great. And I love bringing local color to my audience. And we're here in Seattle, don't you know? So before we begin, I want to ask you a question that I've been asking all the local folks.
who I've chatted with for in this series, Bondage Lessons Max, Lady Lydia, Monk, Tony Buff, Cunning Minx, Clayton Hibbard, among them. Is the Pacific Northwest in general, and Seattle in particular, a hotbed of perversion, or is it just my wishful thinking?
Sure, it certainly seems that way to me. You know, I don't know what it's like in other cities, really, but it seems like there's just so much going on here. You know, maybe because we have so much support.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first started to realize I was kinky, anyway, there was C-Space, and then there was, after that, there was Skin, and, you know, there's just always been some place you could go to get educated and meet each other here, mm-hmm. in kind of an open environment.
Mm-hmm. Good, good, good. Yeah, I think so, too, and besides, it's a weather pattern that you pretty much could wear leather all the time.
That's true.
You wouldn't want to be in, like, say, Houston or Florida or L.A.
God, no. Although I went to this really hot gay leather bar in Texas somewhere,
yeah.
called The Hidden Door.
Really?
It was like being on a movie set, I swear to God. All these hot gay men in little leather shorts and the leather armband, and they had those big movie fans blowing they had
yeah,
to.
Right.
It was so
Could
hot.
You die?
It was pretty. It was pretty titillating for me.
Well, we're going to get to more of that, I'm sure. So I've been looking at a lot of your amazing creations at winterfetish.com. You are like the freaking queen of kink couture. You have your hands full, so to speak. You eat, drink, and sleep this stuff, yes?
It's very true, yeah. In fact, this year I've been trying to learn to take more time off and maybe go have more fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I find myself just thinking about what I could be making, mm-hmm. you know, when I'm trying to just hang out on the couch or whatever. My boy has really been helping me, though, to learn mm-hmm. to relax a little more.
Mm-hmm. So tell our audience where we are exactly. This is your new space, yes?
Oh, yeah, we just moved in here a couple months ago. And this is going to be the sort of the lounge area mm-hmm. for people when they're working to hang out, and then when we have workshops in the main space, mm-hmm. maybe to come chill during break time or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And we are in the SoTo district of
right, yeah.
of Seattle, which is the industrial area of Seattle.
Right.
And this space is an old warehouse space, yes?
Right. Actually, they used to make jackets here.
Really? So
yep.
you're not far from
exactly. There was a company for many years, and I've only heard this secondhand, but they used to make jackets here,
uh-huh.
which is perfect for us because right. they have all the overhead power and
right.
everything that we need
right. and
already
how
installed.
How much square footage do you have?
Well, we have 7,000 square feet upstairs,
wow.
and then we've got 3,000 downstairs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow. And you're here just a matter of months, you said, right?
Right, a couple months.
Cool things.
It's very exciting because I've been squeezed in little tiny spaces.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like I have all the space that I've needed over the past
yeah.
12 and a half years
uh-huh.
all at once now.
Yeah. How old am I going to do? My furniture.
Yeah.
So you write on your site that Winter Fetish has been producing fetish fashion and bondage products since 1998 here in Seattle, Washington. We take pride in each and every product that leaves our production facility and are consistently innovating to create the next generation of exciting toys and fashions that leave people feeling fulfilled and expressed in their sexual lives. Since 1998, that's staying power, yes?
Yeah.
You must be doing something right.
It seems like I do manage to do something right pretty frequently.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very lucky, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I see people start their kinky businesses and then, you know, and
they're flounder.
Yeah. I see them doing that all the time. Uh-huh. You know, they get into the scene and they're like, ooh, I can make whatever, you know, collars or whatever they're getting into. And then, you know, the next thing you know, they're not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
So I really think that a large part of my success was due to the fact that I found the Darlix fabric and started making the sleep sacks and stuff for Mr. S. And even in the lean times, that's just a stable source of income for us.
We're going to talk about the different products and the different fabric for materials that you use in a bit. But apparently also it has something to do with your commitment to excellence in the stuff that you do and your customer service. So it's not an accident that you are successful, or at least still here after all these years.
Yeah. It is actually important to me that my customers are happy with their purchases. But, you know,
It's intimate wear for a lack of other terms, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of, and it does, it's supposed to express something of who they are and what they're about, and so that has to, you know, come through, and it just can't be knockoffs, it doesn't seem to me, it just can't be a bunch of stuff that you buy at, you know, the Walmart, you know, for that. It's got to be a personalized kind of thing to some degree, right?
Yeah, possibly that's how people feel. I mean, sometimes I look out there and I see, you know, of course there are people that make cat suits, and of course there are people who make whatever, right, hoods and whatnot. But I like to think that what I provide is either higher quality or something that's got a unique bend on things.
Which takes me to my next question, interestingly enough. How do you come up with these designs? Because you seem to have your own take on some very traditional kinky and fetish designs, like hoods and cat suits and whatnot, just as you mentioned.
It depends on the thing, right? Like, in the case of the cat suit that I'm selling, that's actually the most popular, it was actually designed originally by Jeff from the House of Gord.
No kidding, interesting.
Yeah, he actually handed me this pattern that was made of taped together pieces of paper. and was like, you know, what I want is, I want these and I want them in various colors and whatnot. And I think that was back in maybe 2000. And I cleaned up the pattern and changed it very slightly. You know, now it's our very popular design.
Is that what you did for Tony Buff? Is that a cat suit the photos that you did?
Oh, that's just a Darlix cat suit. That's actually just a regular cat suit pattern.
I see.
It's been changed to work for Darlix, but
yeah.
But that pattern I just drafted from scratch.
Oh, interesting. And so the original one, the House of Gord, what fabric is that?
We offer that in spandex,
I see,
stretch mesh, or PVC.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
I had somebody recently ask me for it in Darlix. Uh-huh. I don't know if we're going to do that or not.
Well, I'm dying to know the difference, and we'll get to that, as I said, in a bit, hopefully, because I don't really know from Shinola about the different fabric or the different materials, but I'm sure you will tell us all about it. So let's talk about you first. How did a nice girl like you get all wound up in this world of kink?
Oh, well, you know, it's funny, because I tied up my boyfriends when I was in high school, but I had no idea I was kinky, right? I mean, it was just...
Because you didn't
it's
have
not like,
a name for it?
Yeah, I didn't talk about sex, even with my boyfriends, right? Uh-huh. It was something that I was doing. It wasn't until I moved to Seattle, turned 21, opened up a stranger, literally, and was looking for some trouble to get into, right? I was feeling frisky. And I found an ad for the Vogue. It was down on First Avenue at that time. And I went down there, and there were these people doing stuff in the back, and it was very interesting, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I was completely intimidated. And I went for weeks before I even spoke to anyone. But then I just dove in crazy, like going out every party there was, you know, like, you know.
Immersion, full immersion.
Yeah. There's nothing like being a new Kingster in a city that has stuff to do for Kingsters.
Yeah.
Because you play with just anybody and it's great, you know. Sort of miss those times sometimes.
And if I remember correctly from that Stranger piece that they did on you, you said that you kind of launched into this business simply by making stuff for yourself so that you could go to these parties?
Right, yeah. Essentially, that's what happened. I mean, I made stuff for myself so that I could stand out, and frankly, so that something would fit me properly.
Mm-hmm.
And people would go, hey, where'd you get that? And can I get one? And this and that. But really, I think the thing that caused it to turn into a business, right, as opposed to a hobby, was actually kind of a funny story. I was studying to become a dock worker. I had joined the Boilermakers Union.
Get out.
I had my number to be called to start working on the docks. That they do testing, and then you get ranked against everyone else. There were hundreds and hundreds of people when I tested 32.
Wow. Right?
So I felt all like proud of myself or whatever. But you have to wait, right? So they call the first wave, which is 25, and then whatever happens there, I don't know. They drop out or they move on or whatever, and then they need another wave of people. So meanwhile, you're waiting. And I don't just wait. I always have to be doing something, right? So I just walk down to my local community college from my house. It was like, you know, 7 blocks to see what class I could take or something. And I see apparel design and manufacture, and I'm like, oh my God, I can make myself really nice clothes. This is the thought I'm having, right? I could make myself like really nice clothes. And so I sign up for the classes, and I get quarter and a half or whatever into it. And then my number's called for the doc, and I have to make a decision, right? But I'm in my element,
yes.
You know, and I'm clear about that. So I just, you know, said thanks, but I'm going to keep doing this.
Yeah. And how long ago was that?
That was, I guess it was 97, right?
Wow.
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah. But you were not here yet, or in Seattle, or?
That was on Capitol Hill.
Oh, I see, got it.
Yep.
Yeah. Great. So again, from your website, you say about yourself, I've been a member of the Seattle SM community since 1993, and in 1996, I volunteered on a team that put together Power Surge, currently known as Wicked Women. In 1998, I organized my first fashion show fundraiser at Beyond the Edge Cafe with Washington State Miss Leather Eileen Fix. And from 2003 to 2008, I volunteered at the Center for Sex Positive Culture, organizing the Circus du Nord, and later also their summer vendors fair. And from 2006 to 2009, I served on the board of directors at the Center for Sex Positive Culture. In 1994, I began to make fetish wear for myself and my friends. That's, again, that whole business of complete immersion and community service at the same time. What was so compelling about that? Or why was that important for you?
You know, I've had this conversation with myself, actually. Why am I doing this, right?
Because
sometimes, you know, like organizing Cirque du Nord or, you know, arguing with the board members about something or whatever it is that I'm doing, it takes a bunch of time away from the business. But honestly, I just can't help myself. I just want to make a difference.
Yeah.
You know, and I realize that my products make a difference on some level, but it's not as tangible for me. Because it's not like I can go see them enjoying the products, right?
Right.
Now I'm going to get offers. But you know what I mean?
Yep. You're going to look
for it. But you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
I just, I want people to have, you know, joy in their lives in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is, you know, a double-edged sword. This, you know, a sense of compassion or a sense of willingness to be part of, you know, like the nonprofit scene. You know, regardless of what the nonprofit scene or what the nonprofit is, you know, of committing one's time and energy, you know, to further an effort. And that's really important, it seems to me, too. But it is a double-edged sword because sometimes it feels like you're putting all this energy right down a rat hole and nothing ever seems to come of it.
Right. I just try to manage myself on that. Because,
yeah.
You know, anything you do is frustrating at times and rewarding at times. Mm-hmm. And you just got to train your mind not to cling to the stuff that wasn't as great.
Yeah. That's great wisdom, it seems to me, to pass on to, you know, everyone in our audience that is, you know, perhaps frustrated, you know, by the work that they're doing. Because, I mean, it's worthy work regardless, but it can be draining. So beyond the stuff that that you've been doing here in Seattle for the Kinky community, give us a brief bio. Where did you grow up, and did you said you studied fashion design to some degree, and you came to Seattle when?
Oh, well, let's see. Which part of that to answer first? So I came to Seattle when I was 20.
Uh-huh.
You know, not that far from my 21st birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened because my best friend moved away from where I was living at the time, which was San Jose.
Uh-huh.
We were roommates.
Uh-huh.
And she moved up here to follow a boy.
And
eventually, you know, she just kept calling me and talking to me, and eventually I broke down and moved up here, you know, because she kept calling me and saying, well, they have this bookstore and it's open all night, and then there are cats running around, and we're like, oh, that's so awesome, and she, you know, whatever cool thing she discovered herself recently about Seattle, and I would have to say, you know, I actually thank her every once in a while, like every few years, I thank her, because this is by far a better city than I've lived in anywhere else.
Right.
You know, and it's where I found my people, too.
Right.
Not there. Apparently, there's lots of kinky people in San Jose. I never met any of them, you know, when I would live there.
Right. But you grew up in Southern California?
Essentially, yeah. I was born in San Diego, and I lived in a little town near there called Lemon Grove until I was, you know, like 13, I guess. And there's some shenanigans in there. I lived in Michigan for a little while.
No kidding.
I lived in Idaho for a little while.
Where in Idaho?
A little place called Coeur d'Alene.
Ah, yes.
And my mom still lives near there.
Interesting.
Yeah. And people, they find out my mom's there, of course, they go, oh, you're from Idaho. But no, I lived there, seriously, for like 5 months, maybe.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, you know, I'm not ready to retire. It's not the place to be for me.
Yeah. I did, when I was a deacon, I was assigned at a parish in McCall, Idaho. So I spent like 3 months one summer in McCall. It was very lovely, very pretty. I couldn't live there.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous, though.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning.
Yeah. And it's great to go visit.
Yeah.
You know, mom has a little extra cottage on the property, and, you know, it's just really nice.
Yeah.
But.
So, could you walk us through something of the creative process? What gives rise, so to speak, to one of your creations?
Well, if we're thinking about bondage-y stuff, for example, sometimes a customer will make an impossible request.
Uh-huh.
I find them very entertaining, and I kind of like reading them, but they're often literally impossible, you know, without sewing someone into something by hand or something.
Right.
You know, and then I'll try and figure out how to get where they're trying to go, you know, because there's an underlying desire, which you can usually glean just by you know, figuring out what they're asking for, you know. I'm working the bugs out of a thing called the Lotus Sack, which I've discovered is sort of like another product that's out there already, but different.
Uh-huh.
I guess there's really just nothing
right.
new.
Mm. Well,
but
yeah, one could say that just about anything.
Mm-hmm.
But there are innovations and different takes on things, and I suspect, again, we're going to get to this hopefully soon, in terms of materials, that you know, one material does one thing and another material does something else, and
yeah.
provides a different sensation, for example, I guess.
Yeah, possibly true. I guess my personal leaning when it comes to bondage-y stuff is the more sleek and smooth it can look, the better,
yeah.
but it also needs to be confining and like actually
right.
work.
Yeah.
The reason I keep not releasing the Lotus Sock is that some people can get out of it, and
yeah.
that doesn't work for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not the agenda.
It just really doesn't work for me until they get out. Like, that's just like, you know, forget it.
So, you design, you have moments, that, I mean, things come to you, like, you know, sitting on the couch, you mentioned that a little while ago, or through communication with other Kingsters who are asking you to develop something that would suit their needs, yes?
Right.
Basically.
Okay, yeah. good. Sometimes I think of stuff in the shower and then I can't write it down and I don't remember it later.
You need to get something in the shower.
I know.
So, does your kinky lifestyle infuse your creative process, or does your do your creations make you more kinky?
Oh man!
Or is that chicken and the egg kind of thing?
Wow. I really think it's my kinkiness that fuels it. Yeah. It is a good question. I mean, you could have an argument either way.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't be making this stuff if I wasn't already kinky.
Yeah. Because it would seem to me that there's a lot of people who have the capacity, you know, I mean, technical capacity to do this kind of stuff. But, you know, if you walked up to them and said, you know, could you do this for me? It's like, oh, what?
Like, what? No.
What do you take
it away from me?
I think I already know the answer to this question. People do approach you for one-of-a-kind creations, yes?
Yeah, that happens frequently.
Yeah. And they contact you through your website, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about some of the more recent or unique requests that you've gotten?
Well, this one guy who comes to me about once a year
mm-hmm.
to ask for the same outfit.
Really?
Yeah. It's got the jog fur pants on it and the big puffy sleeves, but it's made out of latex and it's, you know, really tight at the wrists and the bottom of the leg, and it's got a frill at the neck. It's like, it's very detailed and very specific. And actually, each time he asks me, it's the drawing he sends with it is a little bit more detailed,
uh-huh.
a little bit more explained.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if he's ever actually going to order it, but but that's the most interesting thing, you know, interesting as in unique thing
yeah,
that I've
right.
that I've had requests for. You know.
But and the like the outfits and the sleep sack,
mm-hmm.
they have to be made to order. I mean, because if you have a 6'3" guy, that has to be something different than if you have, you know, a 5'9" woman, right?
Actually, the darling sleep sacks, if they're ordered properly,
mm-hmm.
should fit a pretty wide range of people.
Mm.
I mean, each size doesn't fit a wide range,
mm.
but you know, if you look at the chart. Now, if they're 6'4", we do offer a lengthening service,
uh-huh.
and it's
right.
very inexpensive. I forget what it is right now, but I'm actually planning, part of our whole secret grand plan right now, which is about not to be secret, but I'm going to start making things in tall and petite as well as regular.
Oh, interesting.
So that more people can get a standard size and not have to pay the patterning
right.
fee and wait
right.
the extra time and
right.
all that.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. The reason we needed more space partially was so that we could hire stitchers. And luckily, we've already got several people who look to be perfect.
Oh,
we haven't
cool.
actually had them come in and do a sewing test yet,
right.
but
right.
but it's very exciting
because
I'll have time to really get back to basics and redo all those patterns and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Is that labor intensive?
It takes more time than maybe you would think, but I don't know. I mean,
I have a sewing machine at home, and I've made huge mistakes. So I break needles, and you know, it's a mess. I know nothing about it. I've never taken a course, but somebody gave it to me, you know, years and years ago, and I always think, you know, I could really do some wonderful stuff. And then I start sewing a straight line, and you know what? I'm done with it, damn it.
It can be frustrating.
Yeah.
We got a new machine ourselves.
Is that right?
It's called a flat seamer.
Uh-huh.
It makes that seam that you can see a lot of thread on the outside,
uh-huh.
and but it looks the same front and back.
Uh-huh.
You know, nothing sticks out inside. Yeah. And I was really excited about it, and so I couldn't help myself. I didn't really practice with it much. And I went to make a red PVC cat suit with that black seam up the back, because
right.
I really want to make one like that. And I did something, and I couldn't even tell you what I did, but it chewed a hole in the cat suit.
Wow.
And I couldn't get it out of the machine again. So I had to break the needles and pull them out with pliers, and like, it was really a mess. Even after years and years of experience, you can still have trouble with the new thing, right?
Well, goodness, I'm just seeing that our time is up for today, and I have a whole bunch of questions on top of the, you know, materials and designs and things like that. I also want to talk to you about your kinky lifestyle. May I come back next week? Can I bother you again for another half hour of your time?
Sure.
Oh, yay. And in between now and then, we, in your audience, are going to be visiting your website. If you give us your website address and walk us around a bit, what could we find there?
Oh, well, the address is winterfetish.com, and you know, you click on it and then you choose. I have it set up so that you choose by material what you want to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So you click on whatever material seems to float your boat the most and go from there.
Cool beans. And then we can find out a bunch of information about you too. Can we see pictures of your work?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yay. All right, so until next week, we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Bye.
Oh, what a marvelous show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for part two of my discussion with Tanya Winters and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
I tell you, I won't do it!
That's pretty emphatic. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Papaya Toys. Listen up, you guys. Papaya Toys is constantly evolving, developing, and improving. They believe that quality is a process, not a static attribute. Quality means attending to every detail in every aspect of product development, from selecting the highest grade materials to collaborating with progressive manufacturing partners, from superior customer service to consumer education. Papaya Toys works to establish long-term relationships with their supplying partners. This ensures that they never have to compromise on quality. Their zeal for perfection delivers high-quality products at affordable prices to all of their customers around the world. And although they routinely collaborate with sexual professionals like me to help them design and develop superior quality toys that fit the human body and enhance sexual pleasure, and even though their products are rigorously scrutinized by independent reviewers, the most important feedback they get is from you, their customers. Each comment, question, and critique they receive is taken to heart and acted upon. They invite you to join them in making Papaya Toys the very best that they can be. Look for their alluring banner in the sidebar of my site and visit them online. And be sure to check out their blog for loads of sex toy related information. Tell them Dr. Dick sent you.
This is the most tormented man I have ever known.
Actually, I'm feeling much better now. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section, obviously, under Health, subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. And feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.